Good morning. You are listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores, and you're listening to Radio Naturopath. And no, I am not Fran. I am Ron. I am the other end of the mic this morning. We are having a little bit of a delay issue here. No big deal. Ran is on her way, we're hoping. In the meantime, I am here with you today. We are going to talk about whatever we can at this point. There is a bit of distress in the air right now. Obviously, we just survived. I guess that's a word that we could use here. A national election, and there are people that are feeling a little bit off because of it. Or maybe they're feeling really positive because of it. Maybe there's some really good things going on. As soon as I have the opportunity to get a phone going here, we could obviously call in on this, but I need to just kind of reach out to people here. I think this is probably the best thing to do right now. And we need to talk a little bit about how you deal with stressful situations in which things are not going exactly your way. And, you know, there's I spent an entire day yesterday working at a polling station in my town here in Mansfield. And it was truly an experience that I have not ever seen before. I've been working with the Registrar of Voters for a number of years, anywhere from being a checker to being a registrar to being a moderator for the elections. And when you're a moderator, you get the position of being basically the crew chief. I guess that's probably the best way to put it. So you're running the show and you're making sure that all your people are doing their jobs and that everything is going in an orderly and legal fashion. And so that was what I was assigned to yesterday at District 4 here in Mansfield. And it was an enlightening experience. You know, we had people coming in. I have to say, I've been working the elections for a pretty long time now. I remember going through the first presidential election with our current president, and in his first term, and he was it was a pretty interesting, exciting time. We're on a university campus here. We have the ability to get in a lot of younger votes and different energy than maybe you would have in different parts of the country. And I was what they called a checker. And the checker is the person that is essentially taking the name, looking for the ID, and checking the person off the list, hence checker. That's the way that works. And when you work it up here in on campus, which was, it's in actually our local community center, but it allows all the folks from campus to come over, so any of the students that are registered to vote will end up voting over there. It's a pretty busy place, and we had, the year that I worked it, we had over 65% student participation in that particular election, and that was really exciting because we saw a lot of the youth of America get out there and vote and express their opinions about how they felt. And I think it's great that the youth are getting involved in voting again. And that was a very exciting and very busy experience. I also had the opportunity of working with the what they call the EDR, Election Day Registration, when it first opened up. That was a little more chaotic. We had the largest EDR in the state due to, again, the University of Connecticut campus. So the University of Connecticut definitely changes the game up here just a little bit because of that. And it's great that that everyone's really enthusiastic here. Anyone who got out and voted yesterday, a big, big shout out to you. Great thing to do. I'm so happy that you got there. I'm so happy that you did this. This is a very important thing. It is always best to exercise your right to vote. And if you did not get out and exercise your right to vote yesterday and you're complaining about it today, sorry, deaf ears, you have your chance. And if you did get out, you can say whatever you want to say. That's fine. I'm sorry. It's a silly little rule, which I'm going to call Ron's rule. But I just really believe that if you're not part of the situation, then you're certainly part of the problem. I definitely go by that. So anyway, as I worked yesterday's poll, I found the anxiety level amongst people was at an all-time high. I have not seen that before. And this is a kind of a good segue for health, because we're on a health show right now. And we want to talk about, you know, how we can actually process this and deal with this, because I know there's people out there that are having a really, really difficult time with it. And again, I know there's people out there that are overjoyed with the situation, and they really think that the direction that we are headed is a positive direction. So we have to look at it from both ends. But I do think that the most important thing we have to look at, and I've been listening to as much radio as I can between the time that I got 2.5 hours of sleep and this moment right here, and I've been listening to an awful lot of talk about, you know, what people are feeling, and on both sides of the election, and it's really kind of amazing. I heard a program this morning, and it was a talk program, and on that talk program there was a couple of people that were talking about, no matter how you came out of this election, no matter how bad you're feeling or good you are feeling from the election, you need to take your energy and try to move it as best as possible in a positive direction. So you want to take a look at what you think the results of your election are going to bestow upon you, and you want to take that information, and you need to process it in a direction of, how am I now going to work with this? How am I going to make this a positive experience for myself and the people around me in my life? And so I think that's what we have to talk about today, is how do we take possibly a positive or negative moment that we're having in our lives, and how do we make that into a more positive situation for all of us. I think I'll have someone in here in a moment. Just make sure I got mics going here, and we can talk more about the whole situation that we have in front of us here. So are we ready to participate? Let's see if I have you on here. I'm not 100% sure. I'm working the board over here on the other side. So
check one two.
Sounds like Fran is in the house. The doctor is in the house.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dr. Fran. How are you this morning?
My headphones are too low.
Yeah, you can adjust that over there. Sure. Yeah. So anyway, Dr. Fran is here, and I know because we spend a lot of time together that some of this anxiety I've been talking about is being processed by Dr. Storch, and she's our local professional. So fire away, Franny. How you feeling?
Well, it's really interesting. I've been doing radio naturopath for many years, and I was doing radio naturopath in 2004 when George Bush got elected. George W. Bush got elected, I guess, for the second time.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very interesting day. I remember it was November 3rd, 2004. It was 12 years ago. We were back in the Rosebrooks house. And we looked around and said, we didn't understand how George W. Bush got elected, because nobody knew anybody who had voted for him around here. It was very interesting because, you know, I think we were overwhelmingly more in this immediate area, in our immediate bubble. We were more left of center. And people on that day, they were grief stricken. And I remember on that day, Radio Naturopath was 2 hours long at that time. Or at least 2 hours long. And there was a young woman who had a music show right after us. And she donated her music show, and we were on the air for a good 3 hours. I remember George King, who was a local fellow who used to be on WHUS a lot. He came on the air with me. He did a lot of public affairs at that time. And we were all on the air, and we were fielding calls, and people were just grief-stricken. And we were talking about, we really feared for the safety of our country. It was really interesting. So right now what's going on is that people, what I'm seeing was very interesting, because this morning, last night I watched the election. Last night my experience was, I was at work And I blessedly had a busy day. And so I had a lot of charts to work on. So I had a lot, you know, what we call the stack. So I was working on a lot of charts. And in the meantime, Google had a function where you could put in electoral results, and it gave you ongoing results. And there was a little map and a listing of the states and percentages and how far along they were coming. And when each state's electors were finally elected, it came up in bold, red or blue, whether it had been taken by the Republicans or the Democrats. And you had a little map and you had this list. So I had that going and I kept refreshing it and I kept watching it. And, you know, I think a lot of us assumed that ultimately Hillary was going to take it. And I saw early on that Trump was ahead. Trump was ahead. And I'm like, well, oh, well, she's still going to get California. And she did. And they would pull ahead, but she never pulled ahead. He always had more electors than her. And I looked at this and went, oh, my goodness, Trump is really going to take this. There's a real shot here. And then he did. And I was pretty shocked, I have to say. I really didn't think that would happen. But what we need to know is that this is what America wants. Most of America wants this. They want Donald Trump. They want what he has to offer. The things that he's done, the so-called sins that he's committed, you know, the allegations of rape and the allegations of harassment of women, the bankruptcies, the white privilege, those are fine. Those are okay. Those are being discounted for the message.
Right. And what was discussed this morning when I was at the community center, which is a great place to hang out after an election, by the way. Oh, my God. Anyway, at the community center, there was just a lot of discussion about the bubble that we live in here.
Yes.
You know, we are in, and if you look at the maps, like you were talking about the Google map that shows, you know, what's going on out there and shows you where the states are voting and how it's working out. That we live in a very special little bubble, and you know, it was in. I take this from a friend who is he's pretty astute, and he said, you know, we are unaware of how we are observed. We being this blue bubble that we sit in here, amongst the rest of the country, as we do not understand the rest of the country, and now we certainly do because they got our attention, didn't they? That they look at us as elitist, those of us in the blue bubble. And he said, you know, we have to understand that they see us and view us in a much different way. Those of us who are sitting in this, you know, education bubble, and, I mean, you take a look at the Boston area, you take a New York. I mean, New York, you know, Hillary just annihilated Trump in New York. There wasn't even a question about it. And, you know, we're just this is an eye opener for everyone on both sides, and it's tough though. It's really, really hard to take. I'm having a hard time processing it myself. And I was watching the numbers last night. I saw a count at my polling station that turned into 82% of my polling area participating in the vote.
Right.
Never seen numbers like that before.
So people came out of the woodwork to vote.
And they did. I know a lot of people in this town, and I know a lot of people at that polling station, and I didn't recognize a lot of people there.
Yeah.
So they're not in, you know, your and my world.
Well, I think you, because you were at your polling station, and I went and voted at the place where, at our voting place, and I think it's a different population that's served by our polling place.
But
so I didn't see those people.
Right, but both of those polling places are on the south end of town. Yeah. We are removed from the university. We are
kind of, sort of.
We are not really right next to the university because of that. So it's, you know, I didn't have a lot of students that came through my polling station.
No, the students are going to go to the Mansfield Community
Center. You didn't have
a
lot of students that came through your polling area where you voted either.
No, I guess not.
But, you know, District 1, which is right up here at the community center, I just looked at the moderator who ran that, and a tip of the hat to Mark for what he had to do yesterday and had to put up with. And a really big tip of the hat to the EDR, Election Day Registration people, because they were busier than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're seeing a different demographic where we are. We have more of the folks that are working folks that are in the southern part of Mansfield.
Right. Yes, along Route 32 corridor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's where you, that's where Annie Vinton serves.
Yeah, that was my area of that. And then, you know, we do Stearns Road, Browns Road, you know, certain sections of it, and then you cross over a line, and one neighbor may go to one polling station and one may go to the other one.
Right.
It's kind of funny,
yes,
the way they divide the line, but they do divide the line. So, yeah. But it's a more hands-on working crowd that is in our particular areas than there is as you get closer to stores. I'm not saying that people don't work that are near stores, and please don't get mad at me for that. I'm just saying that there are a lot more students up here. And there are a lot more students. I mean, think about it, if you're 18 years old, you just got the opportunity to vote, it's a presidential election, it's an extremely exciting time of your life. And so, you know, there's an energy there. Whichever direction you decide to vote, there's still this incredible energy of the fact that you get a chance to vote and it's your first shot at it. And it's kind of a powerful thing. It's very, very nice. So anyway, how did you feel the energy in your polling area?
I make a celebration of voting, and this is the third year in a row that I've run to the poll. And there's a few people who do that. They exercise to the poll, and there were at least two other Facebook friends who ran to the poll. They put on their running clothes and they ran to the poll. And this was the first year I got up really early and I walked, because I only wanted to run 4 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran I walked to the boat launch,
mm-hmm,
and then I ran to the poll. I voted. I said hello to everyone. I took a selfie with Greg Haddad.
I saw that.
So the thing was, it was high at that time in the morning. It was early in the morning. So I got there. It was probably 7 o'clock or it was in the 7 o'clock hour. And so you had people there who were on their way to work mostly. And it was sort of busy, but there wasn't really a line. But there were a lot of people coming in and out constantly. And they were pretty much the people on their way to work of Mansfield.
Mm-hmm.
And the mood was high. The mood was sad. Of course, it was only 7 o'clock in the morning. Nothing had really happened yet.
Right.
And people were pumped because they voted. They were there to vote and they were there to take part in the democratic process. And that was exciting. And so I saw people I know. I said hello. I voted. I got my sticker and I was running. So I was on a runner's high. And I think most of the polling places have a bake sale outside of them. And I knew the woman who was running our bake sale, as I did last year. It was a different woman. They were both people I knew.
Yeah.
In a way, I can't tell you.
That's fine.
Both of them. That was really funny. Both years, two different women that I know that way.
Yeah, that's funny.
And so they were. So it was lovely to see those people. And so the voting experience was fun. And of course, at that time, nothing had really happened yet.
Yeah.
And so then, as the as the day wore, I didn't pay attention because I was working all day. And then at the end of the day, when it was time to do my charting, that's when I could pull up Google and put that thing up and watch the returns come in.
Sure.
As they happened. And so so I was watching as it came in. One of the things that I noticed is, you know, we talked about because we ride our bikes a lot. And one of the things you do is when you ride your bike, you're riding a lot slower than you are when you are driving a car, and you're driving around back roads, so you see people's houses. And I remember being very impressed over the course of this cycling season with the number of Trump Pence signs. We saw loads of them, and I don't feel like I almost want to say that we didn't see as many Bush signs last time. That people really, that Obama was very exciting for people. He represented change, and so a lot of people were going in that direction. This time, there were a lot more Trump Pence signs everywhere we went.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that was, big shout out to Hillary Clinton's campaign about not covering that. You know, there wasn't a lot of counter cover on it. So
right.
if a particular house put out let's say a Trump Pence sign.
Yeah.
You almost always get someone down the street who has, you know, the opposite, the Hillary sign, and didn't see it.
No, we didn't see a lot of Hillary signage anyway.
So if anyone here is listening that is from the, your local Democratic town committees, or campaigning, you might want to make record of this. It doesn't really matter where you are. And I know that, you know, it didn't really make a difference here in Connecticut, because Connecticut did end up voting in the direction of blue and keeping it there. So that's where it was. But it does make a difference, because this person that is putting that sign in their house is quite possibly connected to someone who lives out in the Midwest.
Right.
So, or down south, or somewhere, or maybe even in Florida. Maybe they have a parent who's retired in Florida, like you do, and, you know, that might influence the discussion thereof, might influence the decision that is made down there in a swing state like that. And, you know, it's, you know, that's just a little critique for you. But how you feeling?
So what went on was, I was very interested to see this morning, because I had the Today Show on, and the Today Show is NBC, and NBC is left of center. Last night, as I was watching, I put MSNBC and also NBC. I went back and forth between them last night, and I was looking at them, and their mood was clearly somber. As they were reporting, they were trying not to be, they're trying to maintain their impartiality. But I think they were astounded that Trump was actually going to pull this off. And I think they were sober. They were very sobered. And, you know, they were trying not to express that they didn't like the outcome. But that seemed to be what was going on. Today on the Today Show, it was business as usual. They just talked about how we were going to have president. And they were just there upbeat and buoyant and, you know, happy cells. And it was the Today Show, business as usual. They were talking about the election and talking about how they took it. And they're reporting it. And there was still lots of fun and smiles. And Dr. Oz talked about wrinkle cream and yay. So all that that somber mood had gone away from NBC. So we were concerned that if Hillary won, that the militia was going to come out, that there was going to be, that the people who were pro-NRA were going to take their guns and they were coming out and there were going to be riots in the streets. And because Trump had said things about, I don't know what people are going to feel about that. I'm not sure what people are going to think. They might be out, and because he'd said things like that.
He'd made suggestions that would indicate that it was okay for them to take their anger to the streets.
Right. And so, what I saw, so I was on Facebook a lot last night, and I think I'm going to have to take a break from it. I've got it open right now. The overwhelming mood for the people who, who didn't want Trump to be in power is grief. They're not taking to the streets and shouting. They're not picking up arms. They're not angry. They're deeply, deeply wounded. They're horrified. They're wounded. They're grieving. The words I hear are brokenhearted. My heart is broken. Another theme that I see running, many, many parents are saying, I don't know how I can get up and talk to my children about who is president now, this person who debases women, who sees women as chattel and pieces of property and shames them and is accused of unspeakable acts and, and who has bankrupted companies and swears on TV and makes fun of military families and people with disabilities, that this is our president and this is who is representing our country now. And it is amazing to me that we could have the Obamas, who say what you will about them, about their policies and what they accomplished and what they didn't accomplish. They were a class act. I mean,
they were. They still are, by the way. They are still in office.
They're very clean.
And they will be in office until the end of the year. So there is, you know, we can still look in a very positive light towards them. And as I was saying when I was listening to the program this morning, you know, we have to think of positive things right now because it's the way we're going to draw ourselves out of this.
Well, and so it's really amazing to me to go from someone who was a pioneer, he was the first Black president, who was very clean, who's very he doesn't have a nasty history following him, to go for this. And this is somebody who had no problem with accusing Hillary of debauchery. I mean, and her debauchery was bad emails. And that's basically all they could get on her. And he turned bad emails into she's a lying, thieving crook, and there should be a federal investigation of her. Of course, the FBI is saying there's no reason to investigate her. There's nothing exciting in those
emails.
Well,
at the 11th hour, right. There's a little conspiracy there. I'm sorry.
And so then, meanwhile, it's amazing to me when people who do harsh acts, who are hurtful, who say hurtful things, who start whisper campaigns, who are unkind to people, who threaten people, who just behave in ways that I would never behave, or that I really try not to, who are willing to throw horrible accusations at people who are not like that, who are just trying to do their job. I mean, one of the ways that he won was to smear her. And I just don't know how much of this was because she was a woman when we're not ready for a woman. And would anyone else have faced up to him? Anyone else put up against him? Would they have been able to best him in some other way? If another woman had gone up against him, I mean, we really wanted Elizabeth Warren or Claire McCaskill to run against him because they had a cleaner past. Not that hers was so terrible, but it was enough that the media could make a big stink out of it, and so could Trump, and Trump won.
Yeah.
And this is a person who has never held public office. He has no experience. He just is someone who can stand on a mountaintop and blow his horn, and he has no shame. He has no shame. He has no remorse. He has no self-reflection. And what I'm seeing in the social media, in my social media circles, is that people are deeply, deeply aggrieved. They're in mourning. They're crying. They're feeling like they have to talk to their children about how the world is going to be. There are people who feel like they're going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose their health care. That's a big one. I mean, we keep talking about that Obamacare is going to go away. And there's certain people that's going to really, really hurt them. When they lose their Obamacare, their insurance plans are going to go up to back to unaffordable, and you're going to have many, many people without insurance again. I mean, he's going to have to come up with something quick to replace it.
He says he's going to replace it with something great, something much better, and yet there is no plan. There's no layout as to what it is.
No,
so,
I know.
You know, I think that the uncertainty is what we're all feeling right now, don't
right.
you?
So here I have my Facebook up. I have different people who have posted different things. I have one of my friends who was calling this a day of prayer for peace and courage. People are trying to transform this, and people in the spiritual communities are trying to come together and pray and figure out what to do and come together to reunite as a nation. And people are, putting positive energy out of it because people are deeply aggrieved. I don't think people are so in so much pain right now. Really, people are in mourning. That's how people are feeling.
Yeah.
They don't feel like taking to the streets. They don't feel like they don't feel like shooting people. They feel like crying and praying and hugging each other and weeping and gnashing teeth. That's what's going on. People are not. That I'm not hearing violence. I'm hearing...
it's not up the revolution sort of thing.
Not at all. People are brokenhearted. People are horrified. They're brokenhearted. They're sad. They don't know what to do with themselves. That's where people are right now. And people are trying to figure out what to do. There's a lot of talk about Trump and misogyny. How white women could have voted for Donald Trump.
Right.
Also, you know that Hillary won the popular vote.
I had just heard that.
Yes, she did win the popular vote.
We have a caller if you'd like to grab that. I can take over from here.
Okay.
So anyway, if we just missed you, caller, you should call us back because I think that I think you hung up on us. Keep trying. Keep trying. We're on a roll here today. So
yeah, we're happy to take your calls.
And we're
if
happy
like
to take your calls. Please call us and at 860-486-9487. You can call us. You can text us. But please, please feel free to participate here. And let's share some of how we're feeling today. Again, okay, Fran, you can go ahead.
Right. And so people are just figuring, I think that what's going to happen is people, when you're brokenhearted and you're grieving, you have to move through that. You can't act when you're in that place. I think where I'm at is I'm really shocked. I didn't know that this was going to happen. I really don't know what he's going to do. I don't know if we're going to be safe. I don't know if the world's going to be safe because he's so impulsive. I don't know if he decides to make decisions that aren't good for America, if his advisors around him are going to keep him in check. I just have no idea what's going to happen, and I'm afraid. One of the things that Trevor Noah said last night was be upset and be concerned, but don't descend into fear, because fear is what... fear is what Trump
fear,
got this
fear
to
is
happen.
A controlling force.
Yes.
It's something that those that are in positions of power actually look for. They look for the way of putting someone into a fearful position, because they put them in the fearful position, then they can then control the situation better.
Because fear spurs people to act.
You really need to have more courage here and
right.
a more positive thought, and that is probably the best way to deal with this.
Right. And so... as we move along, I guess we have to see. We have no idea what's going to happen. This is unprecedented.
And you know, remember the turning of the century, and the world was going to end.
Yeah,
did it end?
You mean Y2K?
Yeah,
right.
Did it end?
No,
it didn't end. But was there a lot of fear and anxiety generated around that?
Yeah. There was.
So, you know, we have to kind of look at it like that. We have to look at it.
Well, we don't know if it was the same. But for the first time in my life, I was sitting there and I was looking at Trevor Noah and his correspondent, Roy Wood Jr. So Trevor Noah and Roy Wood Jr. are sitting
who was
there.
Chugging a bottle of Pepto-Bismol.
Yes. I was looking at them going, you know, and we like to watch our alternative media sources, and I'm sitting there laughing along because, you know, of course those guys are they're freaking out too, but they're also you know, trying to inject some humor into it. And I'm looking at them, and you know, The Daily Show is one of the premier political satire shows on TV. It started by Jon Stewart and then mm-hmm. handed over to Trevor Noah. And I'm looking at Trevor Noah, and Trevor Noah is an immigrant. He's a South African mixed race man, and Roy Wood Jr. sitting next to him, and he's a black man, and they're doing zinging satire on this whole situation. And I actually looked at it and went, wow, I wonder if in a year's time they're going to still be allowed to do this, if they're going to get in trouble, if they'll be taken off the air because the Trump presidency is going to allow censorship, if Trump is going to censor people who speak are satirical towards him.
I think we're worrying a little too much about that. I think there's enough checks and balances. I was having this conversation this morning.
Mind, though.
But yeah, I understand, and it would. I understand that it would. There, you know, and but there are a lot of checks and balances that are built into our system to keep things like that happening. Certainly, to keep things from happening like that overnight. The only way that something like that can happen overnight is if there is a, you know, severe attack upon the nation, and then, you know, the martial law can take over in that situation. And otherwise, it you know how long it takes to pass a bill?
Yeah,
especially with the people that are working for the Democrats and the Republicans right now.
Yeah, it takes
a
long time.
Or supposedly working for us, but that's obviously
that's
not
that's if the government
true.
Continues to work the way it does. The people are really afraid that he's going to take over and become a dictator. That's what people are worried about.
I understand, but we have too many checks and balances built into our system to have that happen. So
yeah, and the other thing, then that's great, and I hope to God you're right. I really hope to God you're right. And we said, oh, that can't happen. This can't happen. This can't happen.
Oh, I know.
And they said, there's no way he can run for president. And he ran for president.
Right.
There's no way that he's gonna become one of the Republican nominees. And he became the Republican nominee. There's no way that he's going to win. And he won. There's no way he's going to put draconian, archaic practices into balance. What's going to happen?
Right.
I have no
right.
idea. I mean, all of these things. And the thing is, we have to understand that overwhelmingly, well, I don't know. Hillary did win the popular vote, but not by much.
Yeah.
There are a good percentage, almost half the people of America want this. They want him. They want him and they want what he has to offer and they believe in him. And I don't know if it's that they agree with him in terms of the sexism and the racism and the xenophobia, or they're willing to overlook that because he offers something that's different than the establishment.
And,
all right, I'm going to go ahead and take this call.
And I think what it is you know, the big theme around this, even during the primaries that were going on when we had, you know, Bernie Sanders going against Hillary Clinton, and we had, you know, we just had a 16 characters coming out of the Volkswagen, little tiny Volkswagen, out of the clown car, and they were all running for the Republican. I mean, it was just a maddening race and maddening primary, and it was because we were looking for something different. And I think that that's probably something that people experience in their lives all the time, and it's a it's something that, you know, you may see that in a work situation. You may see that in a life situation where you're not really sure what you want, but you know you need change. So you make the you make a decision that this is what you're going to do. You're not going to go with what you've normally seen, and you're going to go in a direction of change. And I think that that really really drove our election right now. I mean, it drove the primary dramatically.
Okay,
it drove the election dramatically. Right. And I'm, again, not overly sure that either the DNC or the RNC were overly thrilled with the picks that they had that were running. But they, you know, we got what we got, and then, but people were looking for change, and then they started taking everything they were hearing from the.
So we have a caller who wanted to go on the air, and I hit the wrong button, and dropped him. So, if he could call back, we would greatly appreciate that.
And then we'll figure out how to do that. Okay. So. Yeah, so anyway, you know, I think the real crux of the matter here is that the DNC and the RNC have completely lost control of their parties. And so what we ended up were two, obviously, if you take a look at the election results nationwide and you take a look at the numbers being down, largely down, not in my town, but in many places around the United States, people were not real thrilled about even getting out and voting this time, which really surprises me because this was probably one of the most critical elections we've had in many, many years. So again, the DNC and the RNC need to reevaluate this and get control of their parties.
So I'm just trying to get the caller to call back because I hit the wrong button. I hit the wrong button to put him on the air, and then I'm trying to get him to call back. But meanwhile, he has a contention. He doesn't think that Trump is a racist. And he thinks that, yeah. And he said, why do I think that he's a racist? And why am I speaking on the air and creating such despair?
Well, please call back because we would love to hear your opinion here. And we'll try not to be overly judgmental, but we obviously are on the other side of that idea. But we would love to have you call back because we... you know,
well, we
don't know the man.
One of the things is we don't really know Donald Trump. We don't know anything.
That's what I just said.
Don't know Donald Trump at all. And to say that he believes this or that, we really don't know what he believes at all. We know that he has a public persona. We know what he has said. That's all that we know.
Well,
we actually don't know if he's racist or not. We do know that he has said that he wants to vet any Muslim that comes into this country to make sure that they're not a terrorist. Mm-hmm. And we do know that he said that he would like to build a wall across the Mexican border to keep Mexican illegal immigrants coming out, and he wants to deport a lot of immigrants. So to say that it's true that he hasn't said, like, the N-word,
no.
Or he hasn't said, you know, any this group of people is stupid, but he wants to do policies that you make assumptions that he wants to take broad strokes and take large groups of people and put them at a disadvantage.
Right. And Donald Trump has a technique which he uses. If you really study Donald Trump and you have read anything from The Art of the Deal, which is a book that he put out, he has an actual mental technique that he uses to get people to think in his direction without truly getting his opinion out. But he finds out what your opinion is, and then he sides with that and brings you into his fold. And that, I think, is what he did better than Hillary Clinton could have ever performed at.
No.
He was very good at it. He found the people who had racist feelings, and he drew them into his little fold.
Yeah.
He found the people who had sexist feelings, and he drew them into his fold. And he represented them and their feelings, and that's who voted for him. Those are the people that voted for him. And I think the one that really flips me out more than anything else is the religious right. I mean, the evangelical Christians have extreme values about certain things that he was pulling these people into his fold over, and yet they sided with him.
Yes.
And it's very hypocritical. Sorry, I'm going to say it, but you know, you really need to think about your values.
What
if your
said,
values are based on religion and they're based on your higher power, then you should, you know, you should follow that. I shouldn't really say what you should or shouldn't do, but anyway. So I think we have a caller back on here again.
Okay.
And we're going to figure out how to get this caller on the air.
Hang on. Let me push the right button. You're not on the air yet. Let me
push the button. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, we're working on putting this caller on the air because someone wants to talk with us about this. And that's, you know, this is a talk show. This is what we're here for.
No.
So anyway, we're having a little technical issue here, I think, but we're working on it. Hang on. So, you know, this is a tough time for us. And caller, are you there? Let's try this one. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hello. Thank you for calling
Hi.
Us.
This is Greg from Columbia.
Greg from Columbia.
Hi.
Thanks for calling,
yes.
Greg. We really appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Listening to the show and calling in.
I enjoy it. I'm a frequent listener, and I'm a little dismayed that you're so upset about the election results, but I enjoy many of the other topics that you discuss on the show.
Okay. That's
okay.
fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
I think Donald Trump had quite a bit of enthusiasm because he basically went against the media and went against a lot of Clinton money and still prevailed in the election results.
Yeah, well, you
he
made
did. You're right, he did.
You don't do that without a lot of popular support.
No,
he had
you
a
don't.
Lot of popular support, you're right.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And you know, it's back to what I was talking about earlier. We're talking about the fact that people are looking for change. You know, they're not looking for the status quo. They're not looking for what has always directed them where they are in life today. And so, yeah, Donald spoke against it. He really did. He gave that I'm the tough guy in the schoolyard, and I'm the guy who's, you know, gonna make things different. And people went for it.
I mean, granted, he has some personality characteristics that are a little bit different than your typical politician.
Do you think?
But if you look at him as being a man who has been successful in the business world and built the enterprise that he has, even given, you know, the heads-up start he was given by his dad with a few dollars, you know, if he can apply some of that to doing things for the country, maybe we'll all come out better from it. You know?
Well, maybe so, but he also had a number of things that on the other side of that, you know, he took so much money that he used in investment and put it under his name and bankrupt businesses so he didn't have to pay taxes for 20 years. So how do you feel about that?
Well,
Do you pay taxes?
Well, yes. You simply, he's using the tax code that's been presented by the politicians, and every businessman does that. Whether you're running United Technologies or General Electric or Apple Computer, you use the tax code to your advantage because those are the rules you're presented by government.
But you're also putting the burden. You're putting the burden of that code on you and I.
Right, and that's what the politicians have been giving us for many years now. And every CEO who runs any sort of organization would be negligent if they did not use the tax code. And he simply plays by the rules that are put forth by government. He didn't break any laws, and he did the same thing any other CEO would do. And he had several companies that went bankrupt, but yet he has 500 companies. So that's not bad odds. But I think it'd be a good time for a lot of people to sort of maybe give the guy a chance, give the guy a shot.
And well, we have to.
We have no choice.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. And just because someone identifies as being Caucasian or identifies with their ethnicity does not make them a racist towards other groups of people. It's simply part of their self-identity. For example, when Obama was elected, it's very acceptable to have an NCAA, which is a national, you know, that promotes African-American interests.
NAACP.
If there was something like that for a Caucasian American, you wouldn't have that. But yet, still, you know, he represents all of us, and I think the guy should be given a good shot.
He's going to be given a shot. We have no option.
He won, so he is going to be given the shot.
He's going to be given the shot. But the thing is, I look at him and I see that he's going to be vetting anybody who's Muslim who comes in because they are Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He wants to build a wall across Mexico to not let Mexican mm-hmm. immigrants mm-hmm. in, and he's going to try to deport people, and he's going to target Mexican mm-hmm. immigrants and who are here legally, illegally, and mm-hmm. try to get them out of the country. And mm-hmm. so the thing is, it's true. He's not saying, I'm a racist. I don't like these people. Although he did say that one judge was incapable of making a judgment. The one from Indiana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
he was Mexican-American. He was incapable of doing mm-hmm. that. But you're absolutely right. We don't know if he's actually racist. The mm-hmm. thing is, he is a white male of Anglo-Germanic descent. So mm-hmm. he is in the privileged class. I'm a white Jewish woman. Mm-hmm. So I am white, so I have white mm-hmm. privilege that way. But I'm also Jewish, and mm-hmm. I'm also a woman. And mm-hmm. I do believe that one of the reasons, I have to believe that if Hillary had been a man, she would have had a better shot against him, that mm-hmm. he used the woman card against her.
Mm-hmm.
So as a woman, as a Jewish woman, I do not feel like I am most of this country. In fact, I'm, you know, Jews ethnically are perhaps 2% of this country, and religiously we're even less than that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we're not generally an underprivileged minority. But mm-hmm. we are a minority, and we still have anti-Semitism. And mm-hmm. as a Jew and a woman, I'm frightened right now. I don't know what that man is going to do with the likes of me.
Mm-hmm.
And not only am I a Jewish woman, I'm a Jewish woman. I have a sister who's married to an African immigrant mm-hmm. who's now a citizen of the United States.
He's legally here. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I have three little brown nephews. Mm-hmm. Who are mixed race, mm-hmm. and I'm afraid for them, because mm-hmm. because the people that he is inciting are racist, and I don't know what's going to happen to them. I fear for the safety of my little nephews.
So that's what's
going on. You're absolutely right that we don't know for sure if Trump is racist. We don't know what Trump believes.
We don't.
What
we
Trump
don't. And
believes.
We will find out.
What Trump believes in, as far as I can see, is his brand. He wants to be president. That's what he believes in. And what Ron said is,
they all want to be president. That's why they do it.
That's right. That's true. But I mean, but some people, like if I were going to be a public servant, I would want to do it to serve. I don't want to do it because I care about. Because I care about being a big shot. I don't. I don't even care about being radio naturopath. I'm here on the air because I want to help people. I want and I got into radio because it seemed like a good way to get my business going, and so that I could eat, and also so I could spread natural medicine. But I don't care about being famous. I don't care about being, you know, getting accolades. I don't care. I care about getting the word out and making natural, because my goal is to support naturopathic medicine. It is also to eat, because I like food. It concerns me that I think that Trump's goal is to be in charge. And I don't know if he cares that much about taking care of people. That's my concern.
I think they all want to be in charge. That's why they run for the office.
But this is an interesting thing.
It's not much about the money, it's the power.
So this is an interesting thing. How many of our public servants are actually in it to serve? Are they there to, because they want to help people and they want to get into that office of power to serve? And how much of it is because they have large egos and they want lots of attention?
Well, I think it's a bit of a stretch to try to psychoanalyze anybody's motives for a particular office, because you really don't know. If you look at the Clintons, when they left office, when Bill left office, they basically had a very minimal net worth.
Yes.
And here they are now, 8 years later, and they're worth $250 million. So you have to ask yourself where that came from and why.
I have to be honest with you. If I had a way to make money, I would do it. Because it's easier to have money than not. If I knew how to, like, really bank myself, I'm not that great at it. I don't have a very big net worth. I have a very small net worth. Well, but anyway.
But your net worth as a human is very high.
Okay.
But I
haven't figured out how to do that. But if I could figure out a way to monetize myself better, I would do it, because it's easier to have money than not. Now, mind you, if I had lots of money, I would be very philanthropic. I would take care of myself and my family, and then I would be philanthropic and I'd try to make the world a better place. But sure, it's easier to have money than not. And they found a way to bank themselves, and I can't blame them. I think
fundamentally most Americans are smart enough to vote for a party's platform and their policies, as opposed to sort of the balkanization of, you know, identity politics that sort of goes on. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at some of the issues on his platform, such as vetting Muslims coming to the country, as an example, It strikes me as being sort of commonsensical that if you're having difficulty or you have a risk that's developing from a certain group, regardless of what the risk is or what the group is, that's where you would direct your attention toward vetting it to minimize any difficulties that might arise. And just to say, well, we're not going to do that because to do so would somehow be discriminatory, just seems to smack in the commonsensical solutions that are available. Do you know what I'm saying? If the risk is not coming from Canadians, why would you spend your time vetting Canadians simply to say, well, we don't want to discriminate from the groups that are causing us difficulty in vetting them? It seems that a little bit of that is out of kilter, and I think the country sort of senses that to a degree. And I don't think it's a racist thing. I think it's simply a common sense thing to do.
Yeah, but you know what? If you want to take a look at that, you want to tear that apart a little bit. We don't have a lot of time left here, but I'm just going to throw this in here.
Yeah, I know, but I enjoy your show, and this is sort of off topic.
Oh, I know. It's fine. It's great. But, it's great we're having a discussion about this.
Yeah,
If you want to take a look at this, look what we did to the Japanese during World War II, and the people that we put in those camps had nothing to do with what the Japanese were doing with us. And then you look at what was done in World War II with the Jews and with Hitler. I mean, there's things that are scary, and I'm really proud to be an American. I'm proud to be in the United States, where I know and I feel pretty secure with the fact that there are enough checks and balances to keep things like that from happening, especially overnight. Once again, it requires martial law to do it overnight.
He is going to make significant changes because they control the Senate, they control the Congress, and he's going to appoint the judiciary. So to say, well, there's checks and balances to look at this transition of power is sort of a little bit naive, because he does have significant power he's going to gain, both in the other houses and in the appointing judiciary. So there are going to be some adjustments. And that would be for whichever party had won the White House.
So, Greg, right. It's been thrilling to talk to you.
We have to wrap it up.
Okay,
I'm really sorry. Thank you.
Have
so much for calling.
Day,
it's a great day for a discussion. Thank you very
yes,
much.
Yes, and please feel
up,
free to...
Cheer up.
Thank you. Please feel free to call again.
We'll move forward. Bye-bye. Thank you very
all
much.
All right. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I just want to throw in there, why on earth would we spend an hour talking about the election? I don't know, kind of because, number one, it's historic, and this is an extremely historic election, and number two, because in terms of the healing power of nature, in terms of the basic principles of naturopathic medicine, your environment is part of what promotes your healing. And I have to tell you that a lot of my patients are coming in and they're talking about this very issue. They're talking about the election. People have election anxiety, and I have had many conversations with many patients about election anxiety. So it is a naturopathic issue as far as I'm concerned. So whatever you believe, congratulations to those of you who are happy with the outcome and are looking forward to a brighter America. And my heart goes out to those of us who are feeling one of the things that we're feeling is grief and confusion, that we can come together and get together and figure out how we can make peace with this and how we can go on from there. So you've been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors, on this very historic day, November 9th, 2016, the day after Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in the American presidential election. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM at the University of Connecticut.